This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3107 for Tuesday, the 30th of June 2020. Today's show is entitled Generating Comfortable Passwords. It is hosted by CRVS and is about 30 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is generating passwords to be comfortably typeable.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everyone, this is CRVS for Hacker Public Radio, and I'm going to talk about password generation. So recently I had to change a password, and given the fact that I was sort of prompted to change it not long after having changed it in the first place, it seems like this is a password that should be discardable. And one reason why I wouldn't want to use a password manager for this is that it is actually the password I need to use to log into a laptop that is issued by my employer. And so it is a password that I need to know and need to be able to type. And I wanted a way of generating passwords that are nice to type, in a way. There are many ways of doing this, I just wanted to set out and do it by myself, really. And I started with a template, which is having a bunch of letters and followed by a bunch of numbers. And so that was version one of the that's version one of my password generator would have a 6-letter password followed by an eight digit number. I did this fairly quickly in Python, just import random, set a variable letters that contains the letters from A to Z, all lowercase, and then I set a password a list. I set my password as a list of characters in this case, and then just do a simple loop for I in range 6. I append to password a random choice from my array of letters, and then I append a random choice from the numbers from the digit string from 0 to 1 to 9. And that is it. In the end, I just do the join. And this sort of was a very simple generation. It generated passwords that were not necessarily particularly easy to type. One thing that you notice quite quickly is that it generates these passwords. So, if you're using, for example, Dvorak, one of the things that Dvorak is optimized for is that in English it will have it will most of the time alternate hands. So when you're typing in English, you type one letter with your left hand, one letter with your right hand, so on and so forth, for a good chunk of words. And So I wanted to sort of use that. And so I went on and did another version of my password script. And let me just switch to that. Yeah. So, and this one is much simpler. I mean, it's not much simpler. It's exactly the same thing, except now I sort of enforce this one left hand, right hand. And the way I do that is just I type all the characters out in an array or in a string called lefts, and then all the characters out in the string called rights. And these are the characters that are in the left hand and the characters that are in the right hand. And other than that, the loops are all the same, still six letters followed by eight digits, and then within the loops you just do this. You iterate six times, right, and you have your first, second, third, fourth, etc. to the sixth iteration. And if you're in an odd iteration, then you take your your lefts, your characters from the left hand, and if you're in an even iteration, you take your characters from the right hand, and then you do the same for the numbers. Again, you sort of split them from which side of the keyboard they fall on. And then finally, you join that all of that into a string. So that was the second version. I noticed it already for the third version. So let me just go and check the third version, because this went, I think, into the fourth version or fifth. I'm not sure. We'll see in a second. Amazing production value going on here. Anyway, so on the third version, one thing that is kind of you end up noticing is that as you're splitting this into left hand, right hand, and you have this strict, you have this rigid structure of going from one hand, another hand, one hand, another hand, and then the numbers. You end up being able to sort of you reduce the complexity of the password quite a lot, because this is a 14-digit password. So, if I'm not mistaken, so yes, 6 plus 8, that is 14. But it is actually just three letters from each hand, and we know where they are, and four digits from each hand, and we know where they are. So that is a much, much lower number of combinations that can be made, or actually, so sort of each of these elements is well delimited where they are. So, and so you have like a combination of so many combinations of right hand, of left hand characters, so many combinations of right-hand non-digit characters, so many combinations of left-hand digit characters, and so many combinations of left-hand non-digit characters, digit character, right-hand non-digit. You get the picture. So, I decided to sort of use an approach that will try to maintain this splitting into left and right hand, and digit and non-digit, because once you go to the digits, I don't use a numpad. If I used that numpad, that would be a whole different can of worms. So I use the digits on top of the keyboard, and I use a Dvorak keyboard, and so what I do is when I split my digits, instead of splitting my digits between left and right, I want to split my digits and non-digits between left and right. I want to split my digits and non-digits between rows of the keyboard and then left or right. And then I use those as states in the Markov model. And then when I'm in a particular row... Okay, so, yeah. Moving backwards a bit. So, what I want to do is I want to eliminate this regularity and sort of have this regularity be there, but not make it so well-defined that it is predictable. So I want this regularity to sort of be... to appear there randomly, so that it's mostly regular, but some irregularities may appear. And once you have these, and one way to get these irregularities is to use a Markov model. And here the thing with the digits is that once you go to the digit row, you don't really want to go back, because there you've to get there you sort of need to move your wrist a bit. And like the other ones, you sort of can you sort of have your finger, if you have your fingertips resting on the home row, then you can sort of stretch your fingers a bit out and stretch your finger and curl them up a bit, and then you're in the top row, top non-digit row, and the bottom row quite easily. But if you go all the way up, then there you have to move your wrist a bit. So you don't want to go there. If you go there, you want to stay there. Or you want to, you know, not be moving in, out all the time. So yeah, that's a lot of talking about this little technicality. So how do you go about using a Markov model? Or what is a Markov model? I think Toturto has spoken about this in a previous episode. And they have done this in Haskell. Right now I'm doing this in Python because it was sort of a quick and dirty job. So what is a Markov model? It's basically, you can think of it as a finite automaton, and best way of explaining a complicated set of words, a couple of words, is to introduce another complicated couple of words. But imagine you have some states, and these can just like be markers. You can sort of draw a graph, and a mathematical sense of a graph, that you have nodes and edges between the pointing from one node to another. In this case, it would be a complete graph. So every node, from every node, you have an edge to another node. And then this edge is sort of a transition edge. And then you weigh them, and they're it's directed. So you have an edge from A to B, and then edge from B to A, using random letters. Alpha to beta, and beta to and one from beta back to alpha. And then you weigh those edges with the probabilities that you do that particular transition. So, because this is a probability, they have to sum up to one. That's like the only thing you really need to do to ensure that you have your Markov model. You need that, and you need your initial assumption. Your initial assumption is going to be something that tells you where your where your system starts, and. Okay, but that's just a general representation. So what are my states here? My states, as I said before, they're going to be rows and left rows of the keyboard, and left and right. So, and basically we're going to put more, what I do is I put more weight on the transitions from left side to the right side, then from the left side to the, from rows on the left side to rows on the left side. And once we do that, now it's no longer necessary. It's no longer necessarily the case that from one row on the left side from one letter on the left side of the keyboard I will jump to a letter on the right side of the keyboard. or that if I go to if I switch to numbers, now I will only type numbers, or I will only type six numbers. I no longer have these regularities that I was codifying in version 2. So okay, I'll just walk through the code, and now it would be a good time to look at the code in the show notes. That's version 3. And it starts with this L's list, and it's L, capital L, S. And it's just a list where each element is a string, and as a string, it's just the letters in the ith row of the... they're labeled L1, L2, L3, L4, R1, R2, R3, R4. And L1, L2, L3 are the first three rows of each of these sets. The L set and the R set are the non-digit rows of the keyboard on the Dvorak keyboard, starting from the top. And then the fourth row on each set, and so L stands for left, R stands for right, of course. And the fourth row is just the digits. It's just the digits. So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 for the left hand, and 7, 8, 9, 0 for the right hand. And the reason for this asymmetry and why it's not 1 to 5 on the left and 6 to 0 on the right, it's because I use an Ultimate Hacking keyboard, which has this particular quirk when it comes to splitting your numbers, that your number 6 actually falls on the left side, so you end up stretching your left index finger a bit more than usual. But that's not that I kind of grew used to it. Anyway, after that there's a big list of lists that I decided to call capital A, which just says gives the transition probabilities. So the each row is the transition probability onto one of the other columns. So on row 1, you have 0.03, 0.03, 0.03, 0.01, 0.27, 0.27, 0.27, 0.09. Okay, and these are the probabilities of transitioning from something on the first one, so from L1 to L1, L2, L3, L4, R1, R2, R3, R4, respectively. And if you note, if you look at it, you'll see that the weights are larger on the R's, which means that you have a higher probability of going from the left hand to the right hand. And if you go from the fourth row, from the fifth row onwards, you'll see that the same, that it's in reverse. You have a higher probability from going from the right hand to the left hand. And this is how I codified this idea, that it should be easier to go from one to the other, from the left hand to the right hand, it should be more normal to go from the left hand to the right hand than from one key in the left hand to another key in the left hand. And another thing that you can notice is that on rows 4 and 8, you will notice that the probabilities are highest in columns 8 and 4 respectively. So once you get to a number, it's more common to stay within the numbers than move out of the numbers. And and that's just basically the idea behind this particular distribution. This was made by hand, and version 4 takes care of making that a bit more configurable. Next comes pi, and pi is just the initial distribution, And this distribution is just higher on the home row, basically. It's L1. Ah, okay, so L1 is the home row, actually. And I guess, yes, L1 and R1 are the home rows in the respective keyboard halves. Yes. So this is just setting up the probabilities. And how do you actually, this is the parameters of the Markov model, so how do you actually go about using these parameters? It's kind of easy. So first you need to sample from these, know how to sample from a distribution. And the way you do that is that you sample a point, a random number from zero, uniformly distributed number from 0 to 1. And then you get the position at which your vector is your array of numbers. So backing up a bit. So you have your number, your array with positions from 1 to 8, because there's 8 different row halves. That we call them row. I would call them row halves in this case. And so they're really states. So I have my 8 different states. And if I want to, I have my probabilities of being in each state at each point in time. And I want to know what's the probability of going to another state. Then I take the corresponding row on the matrix A, and I found what's the and I sort of sample from that distribution to go to the next state. Yeah, but again, I'm getting ahead of myself. How do you sample from a distribution? So the way to sample from a discrete distribution like this is to produce the CDF, cumulative density function. There we go. Yeah, cumulative density function. Cumulative density. Yeah, you could just produce the CDF of the distribution. That is like, what's the probability if you sample from this distribution, that you get a number that is smaller than 1 or smaller than 2. What's the probability of being the first state? Being the first, one of the first 2 states, one of the first 3 states, so on and so forth. And then once you have this on, all you need to do is you generate a number from 0 to 1, and then you just find the number, the first number in the array that exceeds this number that you sampled. And this is what the function sample is doing. So first you take in your distribution as L, and then you compute the partial sums, which is what I just described. Like, you take the sum from, so what this does is like sum L colon I plus 1 comma 0. That's like sum all the elements, sum up all the elements from 0 to I plus 1 on the list L, and start the sum with zero. And then I do this for L, every I in from 0 to the length of L, so that I get every possible I. And then I take a uniformly distributed number, calling random.uniform 0 to 1. And then I just go over the distribution, the CDF, the L partial, and find the first element that is larger than U. And that's the index of that element is the number I return from this function. Okay, to generate a password with this is quite simple. Oh, right, we're generating passwords. Yes, to generate a password, it's quite simple. We take an empty list, and we say that we first sample S to be from pi, and then we add that to the password. well, we sample s from pi, and then we go into a loop where we we sample s, so we never actually use the first state in this case, but anyway, we sample s from pi, we go into a loop, once we're in this loop, we sample s from the sth row of A, and then we append a number, a uniformly chosen number from that particular element of the L's list. And then L's stand for letters, by the way. And then once we've looped through that enough times, in this case I put here 20, we print, we just do a print, we print the password. So, and that's just quotes.join and then the password list, which is just a list of strings, and that will join the two into one big string. And finally, I do away with this with the past gen version 4. Give me 1 second now. Okay, there's a password version 5 later. What do I do differently in this one? Ah, right. In password version 4, what I did was all the characters were lowercase so far, and I wanted to introduce some uppercases. And so in this case, I just introduced, like, what's the probability of something being uppercase, and that's in line 30. It's up. That's 0.1, and so that 10% of the time a letter comes out uppercase. And the way to make that happen is that we sample yet another number uniformly from 0 to 1, and if it's smaller than upper, then our probability of being an uppercase letter, then we turn whatever character that is to an uppercase. Not that this also affects digits, but digits remain unaffected, really. And that's not a problem. And finally, version 5 is the final version so far. Give me a second. Okay, version 5. Version 5 is basically the exact same thing as before, except that now no longer, now the matrices are no longer created. The matrix A and pi are no longer written by hand. What I did was just define this prob function, ij, that defines the probability of going from state I to state j, which is controlled by what's the probability by only two numbers, which is like the probability of going from hand A from left hand to right hand or right hand to left hand, controlled by a switch hand variable, and the probability of switching character type, going from non-digit to digit, or digit to non-digit. And those are just numbers that are set at the top, and then all the magic, so to speak, is done on the prob function, which just checks to see if I and J represent different hands, or if state I and J are in different hands, or if they're in different character types. And then basically just makes it so that the whole thing represents valid distributions. And then we compute A, and we compute pi, and now pi is much simpler. It's just the 1/8. It's just 1/8 times an array of ones. And everything else is computed exactly the same as for version 4, I'm pretty sure. I could do a diff, but I'm not gonna. Yeah, but that was my and now basically this gives you a way of generating passwords that they're easy to write for if you're using Dvorak. If you're not using Dvorak, you can just change the else list, and that will adapt to your keyboard. And this generates passwords that are relatively nice to type because they're, you know, left, right, left, right, left, right. Maybe you don't want to do 20 characters, maybe you want to do less. Maybe you want to put more weight on the... Maybe you want to get rid of the digits, I don't know, I mean... The world is your oyster. But anyway, this is this was just a fun little project, or not so much a fun, but sort of a necessity. Well, a good excuse to use Markov chains as usual. So yeah, that was it for today. Thank you for joining. Remember to tune in tomorrow for another episode of Hacker Public Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.